There we go. I think we're officially kicked off now. So, hello all and welcome to the main weekly CCG meeting. Today the topic is the Supply Chain Integrity, Transparency, and Trust Group from IETF, talking about what's going on there and some overlap. So we are joined by three wonderful people, at least from that group, who will be talking to the work going on over there. Just a quick reminder that this meeting, as with all meetings at W3C, is run under the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct. I've put a link to that in the chat. The agenda for today is in the link that I am pasting here from the mailing list archive for the announcement. Just a quick note that anyone can participate in these calls. The one kind of key item is if you are planning on contributing to a CCG work item, you must be a member of the CCG with an IPR agreement signed, just so we don't get ourselves into any intellectual property fund stuff later on down the road. We do, as noted in the meeting list, take recordings and post them, and those are archived up on our GitHub. We do also manage the queue. Either the raise hand button is now linked in all the way, but in the chat, you can just type the letter Q followed by the plus sign and it will add you to the queue or take you off. I'll copy and paste quick instructions there. Just in case you, need them, because sometimes explaining something that's being typed versus seeing it is a little bit different. Quick pause for introductions. Aside from our speakers, anyone new to this call, anyone that hasn't been on this call in quite a while, you can always call on people like Wendy who haven't seen on in a little while.
Sure. Great to see folks. I'm Wendy Seltzer. I left the W3C team at the end of 2022, and I'm now with TUCAS. Looking into broader questions in the identity space. So looking forward to catching up on the work here.
Awesome. And great to have you. So any other intros, new to the group, not new to the group, changed roles, et cetera? All right. With that, I'm going to jump over to any announcements and reminders, and then I'll touch on the work item menu as well after that. But any broad community announcements? Manu, you're up.
Yeah, just two of them. One of them is that there is a new kind of proposal, I think, that's going to be circulated at the Verifiable Credentials Working Group around the specifications around the Verifiable Credentials ecosystem. So we're calling this the Verifiable Credentials Specifications Directory. Right now it's just a personal repo, but it's going to be kind of discussed as a thing we might adopt in the VCWG, just giving this group a heads up that that work's happening. What we're trying to do is be a bit more decentralized with how we run the registries. One of the big issues with the decentralized identifier registry is that, one, there are an enormous number of decentralized identifier methods in there. And then two, the maintainers of that registry had to repeatedly make judgment calls on whether or not to allow something into the registry, and that was viewed as kind of a gatekeeping exercise. Some people didn't like the fact that the editors had so much say about what gets into the registry or not. And so this is kind of our second attempt at making it a bit more quote unquote fair to get into these registries. Basically, if you are extending the verifiable credential specification in any way, we want to be able to kind of point to your specification, whether it's at in a W3C community group or DIF or TOIP or IETF or whatever, you should be able to at least list your specification there. So that's the first item. Just be aware that that conversation is going on right now around how to make the process of registering specifications that extend the core data model more fair and easy. The second item, do you want me to go into as well? It's the test suite for verifiable credentials too. Or Mike, do you want to pick that up?
We'll circle back to the test suite just if there's any other announcements. That way we can get them up and then come back to the proposed work item there.
Got it.
Any other community announcements here? All right. Wow. Cool. Well, then, Manu, proceed. I'll paste a link to the issue there. So,
great. Thanks. And I'll just do a quick screen share. So the idea here is that the verifiable credentials version 2.0 specification is going to be going into candidate recommendation probably sometime during the summer. One of the things we want to be sure that we have kind of lined up is a good test suite for that before we go into candidate rec. You don't have to do that, but it's a good idea to do that. And so this proposed work item is a test suite for the verifiable credentials 2.0 data model. Right now it's partially complete. We are looking for other supporters from other organizations. Basically this is a, you know, it's a, we need it. We need something that tests the specification, and we're trying to learn from the version 1.1 data model tests to get something that has tests that are more repeatable, so that we can run tests on a regular basis, like a weekly basis against, the specification, to make sure that we can write new tests and understand how the ecosystem is going to do with that new test before like publishing it and getting a whole bunch of hate mail that he implemented a test that, you know, breaks the ecosystem and so on and so forth. So we're trying to do a better job, this time around with a more, you know, CI/CD based, test suite. I'll also note that, let's see. It is based on the verifiable credentials API that is being incubated in the CCG. That might be viewed as controversial by some, so pay particular attention to that. We already have 13 implementers that have demonstrated interop at a higher level through the Jobs for the Future Plugfest number 2 that happened last November, and then again we'll have another one happening in May. So this is kind of a tried and tested approach that resulted in really good interop demonstrations a couple of months ago. So we're trying to apply that same, those same learnings to the verifiable credential 2.0 specification. So the work item proposal is there. We're looking for a couple of other organizations to support it. And I think that's it.
Excellent. Please add commentary to their, to the issue there, and I'll repost, the issue just in case you need it. I think there's, obviously very strongly supportive of testing. I think it would be great to get some broader input from the VC working group and from the chairs over there as well. As well as I think input from those of us who have worked on test suites. Also, I know Lori's already done some commentary there. So, with that,
Mike, I've added myself to the queue, if that's okay.
Yes, please, Brent. Thank you. Sorry, that's my bad.
No worries. My question, how does this CCG work item differ from the work described in the VC working group charter to produce a test suite?
Manu?
It doesn't. The idea is, incubate it here, check to make sure that we've got the irons, you know, wrinkled, the wrinkles kind of ironed out. And then the VCWG could decide that they want to pull this test suite in, or point to it or that kind of stuff. So that stuff is just kind of like a, we're going to have to figure that out later on. But the idea is that this could become the VCWG test suite for the VC2.0 data model.
Brent?
Thank you for explaining the reasoning behind bringing it to the CCG as a work item. I would encourage, rather than doing that, bringing it to the VC working group as a work item, since that's where it's intended to be anyway, and that's where the conversation really ought to be had. and help.
Okay, we can do that.
Yep, and chair hat on, and obviously this is my personal co-chair opinion, Harrison and Kimberly could weigh otherwise, is if we already know that it's going to try to go somewhere, I think we should just take it right there. So I'm very much in favor of Brent's comment there.
Plus one. I can do awesome. That. I guess we have a couple of other work items that are, I don't know if they're taking that path. Like the, I guess credential schema was already a part of CCG. I guess we just need clarification from the chairs in CCG and VCWG what the intention, what we should be doing now that we're like getting really close to feature freeze.
Going directly to
VCWG or incubating here first just for a couple of months and then taking it to VCWG. I was following what I thought was, you know, the process we had always been following.
Yeah, no worries there. I think, Brent, you and Christina and myself and Harrison and Kimberly can just do a quick circle up on email and, decide a good path forward there.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And, maybe I can give you my quick read, which is that if it's already listed as a deliverable and was not incubated at CCG and it's planning to go to the VC working group, it should go straight to the VC working group. If it was already in CCG being incubated, then, you know, that's obviously a different case. So.
Got it.
Yep. All right. Well, with that, let us move on to the topic for the day. And so I am going to hand the ball to the Steve, Hank, Ori combo, along with anyone else they may choose to put on the spot, and let them talk about Skid a bit. I will be monitoring the queue, but I do want to get them to at least get a quick overview out for the group before we start actually calling into questions there. So with that, take it away, Skitlings.
Hi, thanks for using our acronym. I will screen share, and I'll give a quick intro, and then I think Hank will take over. Assuming I remember how to screen share in Jitsi. Can everyone see my screen?
Coming yes. through.
Excellent. So I'm Ori Steele. One of the contributors to Skit, also involved in DIDs and VCs. With me today, Steve Lasker, who we've omitted from the title slide. I'm sorry, Steve, we'll get that fixed for you. Anyone else want to give quick introductions before we dive in?
I guess I'll just say hello. We've been making a lot of great progress on Skit, and is, just working across the various groups, it's been pretty impressive to see all of the components that are already in place that we're trying to make sure we have good integration. So I guess I'll hand off to Hank.
Hank, if you're introducing yourself, you're muted.
It's that Fraunhofer network connection.
That's probably it. Apologies if you hear me coughing or wheezing during this presentation. And as I'm screen sharing, I've not muted myself. In fact, let me go ahead and do that really quick before we get too far in.
I thought I saw Hank in the list here.
So
no, he was driving back quickly. So maybe he might still be in the car getting settled.
Yeah, I just hit him on Slack. So Ori, I think you and Steve might be on point. So
all right, I'm happy.
I channel my German accent.
I'm happy to drive until we get interrupted. All right. So we're going to introduce the Skip community to the W3C CCG. I'm seeing back channel from Hank. No, I cannot hear you. All right. Let's proceed. Essentially, there's been a number of cybersecurity incidents that have raised the eyebrows of folks specifically related to software supply chain incidents. So most recently, the Executive Order 14028 on improving the nation's infrastructure. And there's been a lot of work that's happened as a result of that executive order to try and increase the ability and defensive capabilities for organizations that consume software, or especially software that might have a complicated open source sort of dependency graph, to kind of keep an eye on what dependencies go into your software, how confident are you in those dependencies, and in the case of an incident, you know, how can you trace through the various pieces of software that could be involved in that particular incident. Yeah, I think that's it. Anything else you want to say on this slide, Steve?
No, I guess that covers it.
Okay, now I get why I don't hear.
There we go. There is that.
Yeah, I was using the Jitsi app. That was an enormous, tremendous experience, which typically works well, but, well, not in this case. I'm sorry, I heard nothing. I was wondering when the silence stops. I'm so sorry.
You've not missed anything. We've just gone to your slide, and I said incidents happen, and that's basically it. You're welcome to take over.
Okay. I read in the chat, and I'm so sorry for this. Actual technology works right. Snafu, so my name is Hank. Hank Burkholz, located in Germany, at working at the Fraunhofer Institute for Secure Information Technology, and sometimes struggling with technology. So yeah, we are, probably you heard already some things. Some context, I'm working in standardization. One of my hats, is standardization, the IETF and the TCG. And I'm very familiar with work of the W3C, of course. And, next slide, please. I guess, Ori and or Steve were already going into some details here. We are going to talk about today about SCIT. SCIT is the supply chains, integrity, transparency, and trust effort at the IETF. And this is motivation slides, of course. Incidents happen, I heard. That's correct. A lot of things like supply chains are spanning the globe. Some other people call it value creation graphs. Whatever you call it, it's moving data. It's moving data between stakeholders, and that sometimes gets blocked unintentionally or intentionally. So there is an EO 14028 on improving the national cybersecurity. There's also the National Security Telecommunications Advisory Committee that is advising the president's office about how to counter some of these threats. And I think that is a strong, I think, U.S.-centric a little bit, because both of these examples are from the U.S., but it's kind of highlighting this arrived at a level where people care about things. And now we want to fix some parts of it. So next slide, please. And that comes to what is SCIT. And I've been told maybe I shouldn't spoil everything at the beginning, so I will. So SCIT is basically a set of building blocks that one that is intended to increase trust in the authenticity and the, for example, auditability of assertions about supply chain products, artifacts, statements. And that is for a long time. So exceeding typical lifespans of certificates. And I'm talking about the old ways where a certificate could last for like 2 years, I don't know, 802.1AR, DevID, and not like 6 weeks, as we might be, having approaching in the future. So, so it's about, trusting statements. So next slide, please. And these, statements are about, in the IETF, about software first, because when we approached the IETF and said, hey, let's try to do something very small in this very, very big context, people got very scared about the big context. So the first thing that happened is they like scope it down. Supply chain is a very big word. You can't do all the supply chain that is prone to error because all the use cases will somehow vary and the devil is in the details. And yeah, so software, pretty familiar to everybody working with IT and the IETF and the WC and so on. So supply chain for software was our initial chartering starting point. And that includes all the things like, the software component, the good old SWITs from the good days, firmware descriptions, all the package repositories out there, container registries, very on vogue. And, we argued, for chartering that we would use some building blocks from the IETF that are already there, but not only the IETF, of course. That's why we're here. So next slide, please. Yeah, this is just some examples, I'd say, to talk about things that are originating from supply chain entities. The first thing, of course, is an IETF example. It's a concise reference integrity manifest, basically for trustworthiness assertions created by remote attestation. So this item, for example, this artifact would explain attesters to verifiers that want to check the trustworthiness of attesters. But there's also a very EO-driven context, that is the software bill of materials. I think SPDX is one of the examples. There are others, like on DX, of course, and the good old SWID, if you count that in to that mix. And of course, there are very, very useful things out there that can be used on a daily basis, can be used ad hoc, and that's the Open Container Initiative here. All these are statements about software in the end. And we want to add...
No, oh, did we lose you?
I believe we lost Hank.
He'll probably come back in a second.
And R is correct.
There, you're back.
I could hear you, but yeah, this is a mesh with RTC, you know, and my mesh might, I'm using my phone, so maybe it's that, I don't know. So wherever you lost me, these are artifacts. We're talking about those. We try to increase the believability of the things you state about them. And these statements, I mean, Corum, SBOMs, OCI, distributed configurations, are all statements about more complex software setups, deployments, or packages. Next slide, please. So a lot of these things are in these statements. And we could go into all the vulnerability versus packaging versus build tools becoming the actual problem. That's all nice and fine. I think that's very important content. And a lot of people defining that, we're not doing that. Next slide, please. What we do is help to the issuer to add some, again, believability to these statements, to these artifacts we are talking about, products that we are talking about. So if you're talking about artifacts in software, these are built artifacts typically. In other supply chain, artifacts are already the statements about the product. So artifact is a kind of a interesting term all over the place, but let's go with that right now. So we add some proofs to these statements and make them signed statements, so-called claims. And now basically, next slide, please. You can already forget everything I said about what we're talking about, because that's opaque. Opaque to the SCID concept. We are taking in a certain transparency service, a signed statement, and how to sign it, that's something we specify in the IETF. We put it into a service, and the service has an append-only log where all these claims are then aggregated. And again, that is a append-only locks. So how to use that building block in a bigger system is currently actually out of scope. We do some reference application, like an API with REST, but that is not the core solution. The core solution is how to uniformly sign the initial statement, and when you add it to an append-only log, how to get a receipt back and also trust that one. That's called a transparent claim or a transparent statement in our world right now. So that's actually two things that we are going to standardize here in the ITF and want to talk about here with you if that is somehow useful or relatable. And next slide, please. And that's basically what we want to help with. Issuers need to identify themselves, have to be identified after the fact to some extent, especially if they're participating in critical supply chain applications. And we need this transparency service, and you can argue about the name, but there's a notarization function in there, and it's working like a real-world notary. It does not read the contract. It just says, you said that at this point you can trust me, I have the time, I have the identities verified, I put this into my append-only log, and you get back this receipt with the proof that I just notarized this. And that's basically it. Both of these things are very, very tiny because we're using, again, ITF technology. We can talk about that later, but this is CBOR, so that's, I don't know, a big secret. And it warrants and it guarantees some things, or whatever I say, it assures some things. Guarantee is a very hard word. It assures that you have long-term accountability, and you can detect if some statements became false over time. I mean, some things are product in good intent, and 20 years later, you realize, well, they're actually doing the job, but they're doing other things also, and they're not very good at it, or maybe even harmful. So you want to express that. That's true with, I don't know, building materials like asbestos, and it's true with libraries used for ages somewhere, and then at some point you detect a weakness, a vulnerability, and have a vex that goes on forever because it's never been really solved. It's a conceptual problem. And you also want to have accountability and auditability for who says it and why it was allowed, or she or the entity, sorry, to state that on the ledger. That's basically it. And that's where I hand over to Ori, and he may add whatever you want. And also questions at this point are okay, I think. I don't know how questions really work, if it's in chat or audio, you know, but I'm both.
Yeah, watching the queue. Manu, I see you on the queue.
Yeah, thank you for all this. I think it's good. I've been wondering how all these pieces fit together, you know, for a while. I guess the thing that I'm still a bit fuzzy on is, exactly what is the Skit group standardizing, and what parts do you feel you're going to pull in from outside of the Skit group, like IETF or W3C? Like, for example, what I'm wondering right now is, you know, as you know, there's a verifiable credentials working group at W3C. We, you know, have spent a lot of time on how to express, have, you know, express claims about a credential subject and secure that, you know, statement. What pieces do you feel are you going to pull in from external sources, and what pieces are you defining in the Skit working group itself? I know you already went over that kind of, but I'm trying, could you call out some specifications that you're pulling in, and which specifications are you actually working out? That might help me.
Of course. Let's start with the biggest answer first. We are for these small things we are actually creating specifications for, we pull in tons of context, even for the supply chain use case, roles all over the place, statement examples like we see, for example, or selective disclosure as a use case, for example. And that is pulled in with a lot of text, I have to admit. But then you're asking also, what are we reusing? So of course, the serialization of the CBOR, to address basically to look at the future and express constraint node environments, as well as large scaling systems for every kind of system, industrial IoT or cloud services from the edge or cloud internal. Basically all the scope. That is why we are looking at a serialization that is very likely to be future proof. You can't always be sure, but that's what we are currently going with. And I think it's a good choice, personally. Then we are pulling in, based on CBOR, the concise object signing and encryption working group output, the COSY working group, which is basically defining for CBOR, of course, assigning an envelope. That includes a protected header where I put you all the important metadata attributes that have to be also signed, provide space for an unprotected header where you can, for example, put a receipt to render it with a counter signature with metadata, a transparent claim, the payload, or maybe even a detached payload, and the signature. Yeah?
We have some slides that cover some of that. I think we should advance, and then if it doesn't answer the question, please queue again.
Yeah, circle back. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yep. I'm so sorry. Yeah, I couldn't see it in the future, but Wander, if you stay with us here, I think I'm stealing already content from other slides. Maybe we could turn the question a little bit.
Classic Hank stealing my thunder. These are my slides. You had your chance. Awesome.
Please go.
The slides that we're about to share with you all are from IETF 115. So they're a bit dense, but they're going to sort of recap some of the basic introduction that Hank has given. This particular slide is a high-level architecture overview. You have verifiers. They want to know whether an artifact is authentic. That artifact could be a binary, could be a container, it could be firmware, could be other parts of the software supply chain. And the notary, when the notary furnishes a transparent claim to the verifier can use that transparent claim to gauge the authenticity of the software artifacts. And on the right-hand side, you have the issuer who's making statements about the artifacts, and they're submitting those signed statements, what we call claims, to the notary for inclusion. So this is what Hank was already sort of getting ahead to. There's lots of different claims that are relevant to software supply chain. And there's lots of different serialization formats that are an important component of software supply chain. So if you think about it, the issuer has lots of artifact types that they want to secure today. So there's JSON, there's XML, there's SBOM formats like SPDX and CycloneDX. There's SALSA. And each of these formats usually has some, you know, concrete media type associated with it, because these are formats that software has to make use of today already. And so there's usually a media type that describes them. So, for example, a Helm chart has a media type, and a Helm chart is an important part of deploying software within Kubernetes. So one exciting point of overlap is decentralized identifiers. So you can see in this case, the issuer is identified with a decentralized identifier. And, you know, the hope here is basically what Hank was mentioning before. We're hoping to bridge the gap between the world of X509 and OIDC that exists today and the future world where decentralized identifiers might play a better role in providing identity for issuers. The other sort of components of what goes into a SCIT claim, so as Hank mentioned, it is COSY sign one, but there's some parameters in the header that are important. The issuer parameter is important so that we can identify the issuer, the key that was used to sign, the algorithm that was used to sign. These are all familiar to folks who've been working with verifiable credentials. The feed is a new header claim that we're proposing, and that's to identify basically information about the artifact type itself. And then the content type, this is again a field that's familiar to folks within the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, because we've spent a lot of time talking about media types. And in fact, there is support for using the same COSY sign one structure with verifiable credentials with a content type that refers to an application / credential plus LD plus JSON. So just pointing out the use of the CTY parameter here, you can see in the example, it's application XC910 firmware image, but it could be that content type could be other information that's relevant to a software supply chain. Hopefully that's starting to answer some of your question, Manu, about how this work might fit together.
It is. Thank you.
So another important component of SCIT, which hasn't been there are no formal work items around it, but it very often comes up, is this question of policies and standardization. So, you know, first of all, when the issuer wants to make a claim transparent, there's before they even can register that claim, the issuer might have a policy that they're going to apply. So the issuer might build the software artifact, run some automated tooling on it to decide whether it's ready to be, have had claims made about it. So some of that tooling could say, you know, all right, am I ready to sign over this information? Let me review before I sign. Am I ready to accept responsibility for this? Do I feel confident in the process that was used to create this artifact? Am I sure this is the format that I'm wanting to sign? Because I'm about to sign it and that's signing bytes. So maybe I want to change some part of the representation before I do that. And then, you know, what does the artifact, does it refer to? So in the case of a binary, you know, am I being clear about the identifier for the binary in my claims? Or maybe I want to use a different one. Or maybe I'm trying to protect a particular Helm chart or an SPDX SBOM. So the issuer has to sort of make those decisions before they can create their claim. But once they've managed their issuance policy, they are going to bring that signed claim to the transparency service or the notary. And then there's a registration policy that the notary or the transparency service is going to enforce. So they might require that all issuers be two-factor authenticated and all from email addresses on a corporate domain in order to have certain claims can only be registered with that policy, for example. So if you're in a corporate environment, you know, certain transparency services might only accept artifacts that are from that corporation, from issuers who are strongly authenticated, bound to that corporation, et cetera. Another transparency service might operate in an open source environment where they're taking artifacts from all different kinds of folks, and maybe they're just using OpenID Connect. So the registration policy is the policy that the transparency service uses to evaluate whether a given claim should be made transparent. And usually, you know, the minimum that the registration policy will have is that it's going to authenticate the issuer in some way. Right. And then on the other side, with the verifier accepting the transparent claim, you know, verifiers might have different requirements in terms of which kinds of transparent claims they'll accept and from which issuers or from which notaries. So it could be that, you know, as much as I love Hank, I don't trust him to make claims about software products that my company produces. And even if he's able to make those claims transparent with a notary that's fairly well trusted, that's still not going to be acceptable to, you know, myself as a verifier or folks who rely on my software. And so the validation policy for the transparent claims is another dimension. So this policy dimension is important to think about, although like the specifics of how the policy languages are built and enforced are currently, there are no work items that are actively underway about, you know, policy languages. It's just an important component to understand. So I'm going to show a couple examples of like what is the problem that we're trying to solve here. And there's two ways to think about it. There's the sort of malicious issuer scenario, and that's, you know, where a bad issuer tries to serve malware to Alice but not to Bob. So you can imagine, you know, maybe Bob is, you know, trying to run a threat analysis platform, and Alice is going to consume software. And if Bob catches the malware, he's going to warn everyone. And so when the software is produced, the issuer, you know, they want to serve the package without malware in it, to Alice, but they want to serve the package with malware to Bob. And you can see the little bug, in the malware in the bottom part of the image. So this bad issuer is basically, they're trying to create two claims for the same libacme x86. One of them has malware in it, the other one doesn't, and they submit them both to the notary. And because the notary is recording both of them, an auditor can see that there are duplicate claims that have been registered. So the notary in this case is honest, but the issuer is malicious. But because the issuer is required to make their claims transparent, an auditor can review the notary and see that there's these conflicting claims for libacme x86. Another angle on this is to consider a bad notary. So imagine that a bad notary tries to roll back Bob's version with a receipt from a forked registry. So in this scenario, incompatible receipts, and this comes from the structure of the notary itself, which could be implemented in different ways, as was mentioned. Those incompatible receipts means the notary endorsed inconsistent registries. And so that is also detectable because of the nature of the append-only ledger. And so if you find that a notary is doing that kind of thing, you're probably never going to trust them ever again. All right. So I think at this point we are essentially done. I've got this slide to leave up as we take questions. Mike, are we on time? Am I ahead of time?
I think now is probably a good time for questions, especially knowing that Hank responses can sometimes be informative.
Man, you're really throwing Hank under the bus.
I can't help it. Jim, I see you up first, I think.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. This is a great presentation. I think my questions are a little high level. So, well, first one is, this is IETF that we're talking about. This would be a work item for, right?
This is a working group at IETF. With
a working group. Okay. Okay.
With several documents that are intended to be, worked on by that working group. Currently, the architecture document is the only formal work item at IETF, I believe.
Okay, that's helpful. So yeah, the first one was just sort of, it was my expectation that IETF needs things scoped down a lot more, but the working group makes sense. I think the main thing where I'm still sort of struggling is maybe it's just a terminology thing, but around the notary transparency service, depending on what role that might, what form that might take, it just really stands out as an unnecessary, it sounds like it's easy to just sort of not ascribe too much action to that role or too much of investment in a single, kind of centralization point, because that looks very clearly like something that can be openly audited. Now, I guess the governance of all of this and sort of there's probably use case specific things that I could see some form of curation going into it. But I'm just curious to poke into to get more information on that, because that just really, maybe it's a term service, maybe, I don't know, just more information on that part of it.
Sure. So one thing, I'm not sure if I go ahead to this slide here. Just, I prepared this in case we needed to have a terminology discussion. The transparency service, in quotes, is sort of like the concept of verifiable data registry in decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. So the log part of it is like the verifiable data registry, but the notary sort of action service part of it is a little bit different. It's like an independent role, sort of like an issuer and a verifier combined.
Okay, that's helpful. And all of that said, I think I'm really, even though software supply chain is one of the first focuses, I do think that this pattern will be really interesting beyond that. So interesting. Yeah. It's great that you're focusing on specific use cases just to get somewhere, but I'm also eager to follow along to see how it can inform other efforts. So thank you.
Yeah, Kim, that was really helpful. And I think two notes. One, because the centralization thing, I think, is something that bugged a bunch of us right up front. But unfortunately there are certain regulations in certain countries that mandate, there must be a single, repo for XYZ, right? For certain types of use cases. So we have to be able to meet that plus, more flexible use cases, right? As you can imagine. And then regarding the other use cases and applicability, and Steve Lasker would be a good one to reach out to who's on this call, but, there is a SCIC community, formed to, look at how do we handle things like reference implementations or exploring other use cases with this pattern, as it evolves. So, if you're interested in that side, that's definitely something worth, taking a look at. I believe Dimitri is up next.
I'm was going to ask about which pieces on this architecture diagram are likely to be standardized by the working group. And
Ori
inserted partially in that only the architecture itself is currently. I was curious specifically about the notary transparency service. We've run into the need for that use case in VC Edu context, the notion of, and it's a, that transparency service, that audit log, if you will, is a role that I think we're not talking about enough in the VC working group world. So all that is to ask, is the format and the API of the notary transparency service likely to be standardized by this group?
So first I'll do the easy ones. The format of the claims are definitely to be standardized by this Git working group at IETF. The format of the receipt is definitely to be standardized at IETF, although there's a separate document that tracks the structure of receipts today. There's some REST sort of API interoperability components around interacting with a transparency service that I think are going to be standardized, and that might answer some of the question that you're asking. The specifics of like the internal mechanism for building an append-only log, I think that is probably a boundary somewhere around that where, you know, IETF isn't going to get into the specific, you know, disk layout, you know, format that you've used for your service. But generally speaking, there's like a you know, append-only log or Merkle database structure that's an important component of getting the receipt object. And so there is work that's planned within IETF to standardize some components of that, sort of similar to the certificate transparency work, but a little bit more generic. But that's intended, you know, stuff that hasn't, you know, fully landed yet.
This is Hank. May I add something to this?
Yes.
While, again, two cozy types of cozy envelopes are the core of all the specifications here. And yes, the way how you create a inclusion proof sometimes may be part of that receipt part. We have a lot of attendees that are actually pretty new to the IETF or the W3C altogether. They're actually coming from supply chain stakeholders, I want to say. And when they arrive at a new place, they come with a question. And then you need to reply to the question and sometimes in the form of a protocol. So that's why we're actually doing the REST API, because without at least a reference guidance, that is this REST API, and the IETF is not prone to do a lot of them. But without it, you wouldn't be able to answer simple questions like, could you please give me all vulnerabilities that are known to this thing for X on software, which is a thing people want to be, have an answer to. But if you would just build the building blocks, they would like, yeah, you throw them to them and they wouldn't work by themselves. So there has to be a small, compromise here to provide some reference API, some not a reference system, because the IETF does not build systems, it builds building blocks, and then go from there. And that is, I think, why we are also here, to make more use of these building blocks and find out how to intermesh them with existing work. And again, Ori and Mike are probably more experts on this topic with this interconnected use. But I think that's what this is about. We can't solve this alone. The people, the supply chain stakeholders said that the people that were in this use standard use case, the software creators, all of them are like, yeah, no, probably not. We should give it to keep it. And that's why we're here.
I saw a quick question from Carrie, which was just on timelines at IETF, and then I'll call on Bumble Fudge. So standardization timelines at IETF, Hank, if you've got a quick comment.
Yeah. So I don't want to nitpick at the IETF, but I think the standard latency of hitting a milestone in the IETF across all collective milestones is 1.5 years late. we are better than that at the moment. So at the moment, we are hitting our marks pretty well with only 2 months latency. And the actual timeline is that we have a consistent terminology at the midst of this year. Terminology means that we label them in a way that everybody can compromise and grudgingly probably along. But the definitions are actually pretty much in order, and that is the important part. So the labels of the definitions are the things people are worrying about at the moment. Then again, we have to create some genericness to this. We are coming this from this Git point of view to the IETF, and we have just one requirement on this receipts, for example. But we realize, well, there are plenty of ways to do these trees of hashes, you know, Merkle trees, Sparse trees, label trees, ambivalence ones. And there might be a generic part of this that has to go to COSY anyways. So the deadline, sorry, the milestones will also become some COSY milestones, because we will add essential COSY elements, I think, in the future. But our current roadmap tells us that with the start of 24, all relevant cornerstones are set. That's an ambitious goal, and we can't bicker about things too long. We tend to bicker about naming things, but the side, we're also defining the structure of things. So I think we're paralyzing the bickering with the construction of a contribution a little bit, and that is the mantra of the IETF, I think, not to serialize, but to paralyze.
I think that was very helpful, and I think about as clear as we can get, you know, in an IETF context. And I think one note that is probably a little bit different than we see in W3C sometimes, though we do see this in some working groups at W3C, is there's very much a home for certain places. So, like, if it's a very COSY-specific thing, maybe SCIT-related work, but it's going to take place in the COSY working group as opposed to in SCIT.
Yep.
So, Mr. Bumblefudge, you are up on the queue.
Okay. I was actually...
Last word.
Actually, that was it was good that Carrie got in before me, because I was going to ask something related, which was, are there language-wide package managers that have expressed interest, and like at what level of sophistication, you know, of like, you mentioned like V1 of all the building blocks built as a milestone, like would it be premature for people to be thinking at package manager scale before then, or are you already trying to get input from those types, communities that run package managers?
So if nobody is jumping that one, I think now is the time to put in requirements if you are interested in having your favorite or your own or your stakeholder package manager system addressed. I think that's a statement type. So effectively, whatever the requirements about management your statement is, would go into the requirements of an API, would go into the requirements of the messages we actually want to define here. So it might be trickled down a little bit through some layers coming from a explicit application, but there's no better data than real data, right? So I'd assume we hope to have audience, including stakeholders from that domain, and best case scenario, some hard requirements that are bashing the current concepts, like, no, this won't work because, and then go from there.
Yeah, and to that note, also, I'd call out that there are some pretty large players that deal with distribution of software very heavily engaged in this and showing up to meetings and discussing what they're doing and how it overlaps. So, you know, I think you're going to be, whether you are directly impacted this or otherwise, right, it's going to be out there as a thing. It just might be a little bit behind the scenes, unless we look at things like, you know, education or physical supply chain use cases where it might be a little more visible. PyPy, I'm not 100% sure on, Greg, seeing your comment on there. We are doing stuff directly with machine learning and web crawling input for machine learning stuff. So there's interesting stuff going on there. So, cool. Well, with that, I just really want to thank Steve and Hank and Ori for their time today. Obviously, we could have a lot of fun conversations. Certainly, those folks in the UDC working group probably recognize commentary around things like CTY meeting, because this is important to a lot of us. So, and helps us expand use of verifiable credentials into other serialization formats and uses over time. So, with that, Harrison, we could probably kill recording. Once again, thanks all. Really appreciate the great questions today and the great presentation.